Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Direction for Truth show for June 3rd, 2014, with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening. It's a wonderful day. I wanted to say something profound, like I feel free when I walk out on the farm, and then I come in and listen to the news, and I know how unfree I am.
You're free, but there are drones watching. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
Just a joke, everybody. Just a joke.
Do you have to say that's a joke because you're afraid you're going to get killed?
No, I'm not so worried about being killed. Just because, you know, it's sort of a satirical note of, oh, really, just kidding. Ha ha.
I keep thinking I'm not important enough for them to kill me off. But they have killed even young kids with these drones, American kids, and it's not getting out. There's so much that is not getting to the American people as the truth. I don't know if it's the press withholding it. I don't know if people are being blackmailed. But if all this stuff is going down about the NSA, almost anybody can be blackmailed now because, well, they're tapping into everything. We should tell people that we are simultaneously broadcasting. I always get the stuff we're supposed to tell them. And I love our audience, and they probably know this anyway, but, boy, I see some new people here. So we are simultaneously broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio, and Richard is handling that. He's got a chat going on. How do they connect with you, Richard?
Well, actually, the easiest thing to do is to go to soundhealthoptions.com, choose the radio tab, and then choose Direction for Truth, and there is a link that will take you over to Blog Talk Radio that will take you directly to our show page with the live show, and you'll be able to listen there online if you want and or be able to type into that chat as well.
They can also go to our site, our website, soundhealthoptions.com, and go to the radio link and choose Direction for Truth, and they can see how to jump on Blog Talk, or if they want to join us there, they can watch the show. And a lot of the times, we do things that are very visual. Like today, we are going to do an actual online, real-time evaluation of someone's voice to see if they are telling the truth. We do this whole show about truth because we want you to be able to make informed decisions, things based on fact, not spin. Like all this garbage that's happening about Benghazi. Months ago, we told you that video stuff was a lie and Susan Rice was lying and Obama was lying and Hillary was lying. And we said Hillary is behind it because we could see it in her vocal print. Now all that's coming out. They try to keep it from coming out. But that's the kind of thing that we want to bring you first. We want to just sweep away the propaganda so that you're not so manipulated. I guess we're just whistleblowers with proof about what's really going on, like a reality check. Do you have any other explanation of that, Richard?
I think we're both in different ways, perhaps, but, you know, with your validating software showing the, you know, as people watch this show, for people who haven't been here before, if you watch Sherry do the charts, and I know that we've got a surprise treat of doing a live chart, that using the software to show the validation is really such a powerful tool because it gives us the tools to make our own decisions, not depending upon standard media to feed us the information. And I know backstage we were talking about that, about why isn't media talking about it, which leads me into my very mini rant talking about follow the money. Media is paid by corporate sponsors. There we go. That's why we're not hearing about things.
And I think it's very brilliant, very foxy of them to take a campaign and make a media company that feeds lazy reporters media ideas and articles. So it's just handed to them. And so they just change a word or two and put it out just exactly like it was fed to them. I know when we go on other radio shows, a lot of the times a very unprepared radio host will say, okay, Sherry, what do you want to tell the audience? It's like that, they are so unprepared with questions. But if we send them questions up front, they'll follow them verbatim. They don't really want a show. They want the aggrandizement of having a show, but they really don't want to give their audience the information. And we are so incredibly lucky, Richard, that thousands of people are listening to our shows and our archives. We had, well, I can't remember the number, but just this week we've had like 1,100 hits on just our website alone in just a few days. People are getting it, and I think a lot of it is our audience sending this information out to other people, and when we have a great and wonderful show, they spread the word. Speaking of that, we did a show on Sunday that was incredible. I want to remind people to go to our front page on soundhealthoptions.com, homepage, I guess it's called, and down at the bottom on the left-hand side, all of the shows that we do, Marie goes in and edits them, and then we put them up. But this was about Judy Flickinger and about death and dying. You know, and I thought, okay, death and dying. But that was such an incredible show. She had people crying. I just want to remind people that they can go listen to it and forward it on to other people.
Can I throw a short point in there while you're on that screen, while people are watching at WebEx? Also in that same player down a couple, it says D4T, and then it says Primal.
Yeah, read that first.
Primal Body, Primal Mind. That was an interview I did while you were at conference with Polly Halstead, and she was ranting on in an educated manner about the glyphosate and more information in an article that she wrote that's posted on her site. I think that link will be posted somewhere on Sound Health Option pretty soon, to her site with that article. And it was just a lot of research really showing glyphosate is the chemical name for Roundup, and more of the long-term health effects and impacts and end results we're seeing from long-term exposure of Roundup. It was a great article. It was a very good show.
More poison, more spin, more propaganda that we are trying to help people discern. People who really care about you tell you the truth. Even if it hurts you, if your welfare and well-being is first to them, they're going to tell you the things that you need to hear to make informed decisions. And that's not what's happening for years now through Republicans and Democrats. They're all spinning. And that's one of the reasons we decided to give away this little nano voice computer program. Thousands of people are downloading and sending us wonderful information about how it helped them. But it can help people know what they really feel about something, because we're so buried in here somewhere with all the oughts and shoulds and propaganda and spin and stories and plain out lies about what is really going on. They're just trying, big pharma, big government, big banks,
big money.
Big money, yes. And so what we wanted to do was offer tools and solutions so that you could take this software and actually do something with it. I guess, really, whistleblower. And we want, Richard and I were talking before the show, we want to do an article like the keynote that we remind all of you about on Sunday, the keynote of what frequencies are coming to the earth. Maybe we should do a column, and if you guys could suggest some names, a column about who's lying today, so that we could put it up there and you could quickly check. You know, the resignation of the VA guy was not his idea. It came, somebody's forcing him out. He felt like now that he has the knowledge, he could do something about it. So Obama just, the daily liar, George says. I like that, the daily liar. Well, some people are telling the truth, so we have to be a truth or dare or something like that. Just have to be a little more. So one of the things that I have noticed when I listened to a TED Talk about, it was coming from Brussels, and the guy's name was, boy, Nikki something, and Nikki Hyponen, H-Y-P-P-O-N-E-N, and it's M-I-K-K-O, Mikio. He talked about how the United States is looked at today as intrusive, big brothers, not an open government, that they're feeling sorry for people in the United States because we don't have any privacy in our lives, and they felt sorry for us, but now with the NSA, it's encroaching everywhere. Their people are being spied on. I think he estimated 95% of the people in the world are being spied on by the United States government, and we really don't know the extent of it. So we decided to look at Edward Snowden. He was recently on a TED Talk, and TED Talks are about all the truth worth talking about. And I don't really know where TED comes from or what TED stands for, but they have some pretty high-tech, forward-thinking visionaries. So this is a 35-minute film, so we're just going to cut our chit-chat short and let you listen to some of this. And when it comes to the 5 minute and 5 seconds, this is where he explodes information about what is really going on with the government. And we are not being told all of this. Watch in particular for what we don't know. But before we do that, I want to show you something that was sent to me by Brass Check TV. And it was sent last year, July 5th. And one of the things I thought was so profound, it said, I wrote it down. And this is about Edward Snowden. Had Edward Snowden been German and leaked the existence of slave camps where prisoners were worked to death and experimented on, the Nazi elite would have been one voice in denouncing him and calling him a traitor, too, just like the chorus of Constitution-hating political thugs are calling him now. Now, I tried to reach this link, and big government, NSA, they have removed it. I'm going to write to Brass Check, or I may check with our guys, because almost everything I use on the show, I have them make an archive of, because a lot of what we talk about gets removed. Have any comment, Richard, before we start this?
Let's get right into it. I'm excited.
Okay. And for those of you who don't know, the nano voice that you're going to see flipped up on the screen is a blue screen that's going to take all the notes that he says, that Edward Snowden says, and look at it for truth or lie. Let me know how the sound is. Carnesa says technology, education, and design. That's what TED stands for.
going to represent the interests of the user.
Oh, I'll start over because I was listening way down here. We're going to start over. Sorry about that, guys. Because I'd have to go back up.
The rights of citizens, the future of the Internet. So I'd like to welcome to the 10th stage the man behind those revelations.
I probably...
Snowden.
I'm going to go back and start over because we missed the first
minutes of it. A remote location.
How many minutes it takes to come up here?
Going to represent the interests of the user.
Well,
it
did the same thing to me. It came up way before I wanted it to. I'm trying to go back to the beginning and not have dead airspace all at the same time. Let's see if this one will work. There it goes. For those of you on Blog Talk,
the rights of citizens,
you can watch. We'll put the link in for you.
I'd like to welcome to the 10th stage the man behind those revelations. Behind those revelations. Ed Snowden. Ed is in a remote location.
And I don't know why this is doing
this. Someone right there, controlling the bot with from his laptop, so he can see what the bot can see. Ed, welcome to the TED stage. What can you see, as a matter of fact?
It is stopping and starting, so I don't know what's going on here.
I can see everyone.
This
is amazing. I'm going to go ahead and kill
Ed.
The NBC feature. So maybe this can have more room on here. And
Professor, you've been called many things in the last few months. Whistleblower, a traitor, a hero. What words would you describe yourself with?
You know, everybody who's involved with this debate has been struggling over.
I don't know if I should just put this on pause for a few bits and hear and talk about this. I'll put it on pause so that it'll come up. And in the meantime, I will show you some of the things that we have already done about Edward Snowden. Oh, that's the background one. We did one about a Russian interview with him. And this one was done in March. It showed that there was a bit of ego, but more importantly, there was a lot of information about serving other people emotionally. He had a lot of D&D Sharp that served other people. Now, we'll put these up on our site under Snowden. But he has very much a bent toward putting things together usefully. Somebody has put in the chat that he has recently admitted to being a CIA agent. I would really like to know more about this.
Actually, that comes from the Brian Williams interview where he said he had worked for the CIA. I think that was the one undercover. He named a number of the agencies that he had done work for. But I'm not sure when he says work for, that doesn't mean as a technician or a programmer.
Well, the person chatted, apparently he has recently confessed to being a CIA agent, maybe a previous one, but when we get finished with this TED Talk, you'll see that he is, from what he's saying, and it seems to be truthful, that he is not now working for the U.S. government or the CIA. I took a lot of this apart, sentence by sentence. This one talking about actions ahead of a conviction. He thinks he's going to be thrown in jail if he ever comes back. Okay, let's see if it's breaking ahead a little bit here.
My personality and what, how to describe it. But when I think about it, this is a question that we should be struggling. Who I am really doesn't matter at all. If I'm the worst person in the world, you can hate me and move on. What really matters here are the issues. What really matters here is the kind of government we want, the kind of internet we want, the kind of relationship between people and society. And that's what I'm hoping the debate will move towards, and we've seen that increasing over time. If I had to describe myself, I wouldn't use words like hero, I wouldn't use patriot, and I wouldn't use traitor. I'd say I'm an American and I'm a citizen, just like everyone else.
Okay, I evaluated him when he was talking about terrorism and is he a terrorist, and this is what came up, a lot of emotion on G-sharp, where he's being accused of being a terrorist. G-sharp means physical security or safety. Now, this is almost identical to Princess Diana when they were talking to her about would she ever be queen. And this shows to me and confirms through what happened with Princess Diana, that he is fearful for his safety. So let's see what the computer says. It is particularly bothersome when people use or borrow your stuff without permission. You actively seek to build spirit into everything. You can be very hard on yourself, taking blame or responsibility needlessly. You can be fussy about your physical space and need to satisfy you and no one else. Sometimes you spend a lot of time and energy trying to get even the smallest detail right. Okay, here's what's important, I think, in this context. Your highest note is associated with the expression of physical prioritizing. Personal control over what happens in your physical environment resides with this note. Your note's also associated with the internal perspective of insight and self-awareness. Now, if you look at the chart, and I hope you're joining us here on soundhealthoptions.com on the radio site under Direction for Truth. All of his notes are very, very low, with the exception of this one G note that's very high. You'll see that repeated when the reporter threw the shoe at George Bush, and he said, I am not a bit afraid of this, you know, nothing's going to come out. And he was just out and out lying, trying to uncreate a physical incident, a national incident. But you can see that he has two foundations, a double foundation, a little bit of F missing, but it picks up on up toward consciousness. He almost has a triple foundation. If you'll look at this, Richard, look at -2 and -3, one whole foundation that's very stable and sturdy, and then almost another foundation in fantasy. This is like a dual personality at this point, and we had not seen that before.
Wow.
But 107 in for his own physical safety. Now, I didn't hear him mention any of this, but there it is. Okay, we're going to go on till I think 5 minutes, and then we're going to do a live demonstration of this.
So just to give context to those who don't know the whole story, this time a year ago, you were stationed in Hawaii working as a consultant at the NSA, but as a sysadmin, you had access to their system. And you began reviewing certain classified documents with the Tantic journalist leading the way to June's revelation. Now, what propelled you to do this?
You know,
when I was sitting in Hawaii, and the years before when I was working in the community, I saw a lot of things that were disturbing. We do a lot of good things in public, things that need to be done, things to help everyone. But there are also things that go too far. There are things that shouldn't be done, and decisions that were being made in secret without the public's awareness, without the public tools. And that's to enable an adversarial threat to challenge the government, but also to work together with the government, to have a dialogue and debate about how we can inform the public about matters of vital importance without putting our national security at risk. And by working with journalists, by giving all of my information back to the American people, rather than trusting myself to make the decisions about publication, we've had a robust debate with a deep investment by the government that I think has resulted in a benefit for everyone. And the risks that have been threatened, the risks that have been played up by the government, have never materialized. We've never seen any evidence of even a single instance of specific harm.
So let's
that I'm comfortable with the decisions that I made.
He's comfortable with the decisions he made. I wasn't going to do that, but just all of a sudden it seemed very important to me when he's giving his why he's revealing this. And as we did that, we're monitoring his voice for anybody who wants to download it. It's free. You don't even register it. Just soundhealthoptions.com and go to download Nano Voice. Don't forget to download the class and the materials. Now, Richard, when you look at this, this was a right brain decision. It was an emotional decision. Most of his information is on the right-hand side, and it's blue, emotion, and green for looking at the future and accomplishing something. Very, very little ego, very little thought of justice, and at this point, very little thought of helping others. This was about physical usefulness and management at that point. Unlike Bradley Manning, who really saw that the information was being spun and lied about and distorted, this guy is concerned about things being withheld that could help people manage and have useful lives. Now, I'm going to open this to numbers, and there's only one injustice. So in the beginning, when he said why I did this, it was not about ego, not about justice, not about helping. It was about an emotional decision that he saw would be useful to help manage some higher cause. And I don't know what it is yet. I've only had a couple of minutes to do this. You have any comment, Richard?
No.
Caught him off guard.
Caught me off guard. Well, it's just so, you know, I look at his chart, and it's amazing. The two charts that you've shown us, you know, how I like the numbers. And as I review his numbers, I mean, he's so solid in what he's talking about.
Yeah.
It's not like there are that many holes. He's very founded in what he's speaking from. It's amazing.
And people are saying, you know, this is just ego. It's not. In the beginning, there was an issue with him getting a lot of attention that he was actually uncomfortable with. But there's a split in his chart at D sharp. And D sharp, if they look on the charts that they download, it says information broker right on it. So there is a break between brokering, which means doing it for money or some tangible reason. He's doing it for an ideological reason. I think I like that. Okay, let's go back, and we're going to run into looking at some other pieces of this. I'll try to keep some of it going on as he talks about certain pieces so you guys can see this live. Because I could be making it all up when I say, well, I did this, and here it is. I think the stuff at about 5 minutes in, and we're in 4 minutes and 46 seconds now. That's where I really thought it was interesting. Okay, we're resuming.
So let me show the audience a couple of examples of what you revealed. If you can have a slide up, and Ed, I don't know whether you can see, if you, the slides are here, this is a slide of the PRISM program, and maybe you could tell the audience what that was that you revealed.
The best way to understand PRISM, because there's been a little bit of controversy, is the first part about what PRISM is. Much of the debate in the U.S. has been about metadata. They said it's just metadata. It's just metadata. And they're talking about a specific legal reform called Section 215 of the Patriot Act. That allows sort of warrantless wiretapping, mass surveillance of the entire country's sort of phone records, things like that. Who you're talking to, when you're talking to them, where you travel, these are all metadata events. PRISM is about content. It's a program through which the government could compel corporate America, it could sort of deputize corporate America to do its dirty work for the NSA. And even though some of these companies did resist, even though some of them, I believe Yahoo was one of them, challenged them in court, they all lost because it was never tried by an open court. They were only tried by a secret court. And something that we've seen, something about the PRISM program that's pretty expensive, there's been a talking point to the U.S. government where they said 15 federal judges have reviewed these programs and found them to be lawful. But what they don't tell you is those are secret judges in a secret court based on secret interpretations of law that consider 34,000 warrant requests over 33 years, and in 33 years only rejected 11 government requests. These aren't the people that we want deciding what the role of corporate America in a free and open internet should be.
Now, this slide that we're showing here shows the date in which different technology companies, internet companies, are alleged to have joined the program and where data collection began from them.
Okay, I'm going to stop it there because this is what I thought was so interesting, and I want to jump up and down here. A program called PRISM. Now, all we're doing here and all they're talking about on the regular news is about metadata, just keeping the records of who you called and whatever. But what Edward Snowden is revealing here is that Facebook, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, Skype, AOL, and did you know that Skype was purchased by the U.S. government and they now own everything that goes through it? YouTube, PalTalk, all of these people are gathering content. You don't hear that on the news, do you, Richard?
I was getting no.
And if we look at the numbers, for loving humanity are very high for Richardson, the note of D. What is the best for humanity? This is like a preacher or someone very much in tune with how it should be for the benefit of the people. This is where he shifts. Also, most of his chart is very emotional. A, management, and a lot still in G&G Sharp, which is management for a useful purpose or bringing something into fruition for a useful purpose. Notice he still has this break in D-sharp. He's not the broker that they're accusing him of being. He's not doing it for a purpose to fulfill himself or money, or no one has promised him anything. But here you see the note of D beginning to rise. It's at 53, and remember, normal 42. And that note of D is doing it for a purpose of other people, even if it hurts yourself. Notice, too, that he has a 7, well below the 42 normal, on ego. Although his ego is in the 40s, in a elevated, almost fantasy layer. He feels like his ego hasn't been satisfied yet, but somewhere it's going to be. And looking at C-sharp, is this justice? Justice is still not his intention. His intention is helping other people. So he didn't do this about anything against the government. He did it for the people. And I don't want to go on without letting you comment, Richard, about any of this.
I really, you know, let's just keep going forward because I can rant at any given moment about all of this. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm so happy that he's doing this.
Well, I thought you would remark on his lack of foundation here. His foundation is very skimpy when he is talking about what the government is actually doing. This, to me, would indicate that he doesn't have tangible proof himself. It may be out there when you look at this childlike naivete, this zero octave. He has very heavy 86, 88, 120. So that tells me he's somewhat naive in his perspective, and maybe he really doesn't have the proof.
That may be true. He may not have the actual truth of what the government is gathering or doing or whatever we want to call that, but he certainly has had his hands in knowing what is being gathered, and I think that was really his agenda, is having people go, look at what all this data is being gathered. You need to be aware of this.
And the fact that they told you it was only this metadata, and it gets deeper and deeper here. At about 7 minutes, we're going to do another one. Oh, this is at the seven-minute mark. But we're going to keep looking at this as he goes through. So those of you on chat, if there are particular things that you want to know more about, we can repeat here. Microsoft purchased Skype, George says. The Brussels guy that I listened to today said that the U.S. government has purchased Skype, so that's where I came from that. And I would like to think that we're going to go a little over so you guys can hear this guy from Brussels saying out loud on a TED Talk in Brussels what the rest of the world thinks about America now and what is happening with our reputation.
They have denied collaborating with the NSA. How was that data collected by the NSA?
Right, so the NSA's own slides refer to it as direct access. What that means to an actual NSA analyst, someone like me who's working as an intelligence analyst, targeting, you know, Chinese cyber actors, things like that, Hawaii, is the provenance of that data is directly from their server. It doesn't mean that there's a, you know, group of company representatives sitting in a smoky room with the NSA palling around and making backroom deals about how they can get this stuff away. Now, each company handles it different ways. Some are responsible, some are somewhat less responsible. But the bottom line is, when we talk about how this information is given, it's coming from the companies themselves. It's not stolen from the line. But there's an important thing to remember here. Even though companies are the user and also advocate for the rights of the user. And I think over the last year, we've seen that companies that are named on the Prism slide take great strides to do that, and I encourage them to continue.
What more should they do?
The biggest thing that an internet company in America can do today, right now, without consulting with lawyers, to protect the rights of users worldwide, is to enable SSL or just on a sort of encryption, web encryption, on every page that you visit. The reason this matters is today, if you go to look at a copy of 1984 on Amazon.com, the NSA can see a record of that. The Russian intelligence service can see a record of that. The Chinese service can see a record of that. The French service, the German service, the services in Andorra, they can all see it because it's unencrypted. The world library is Amazon.com. But not only do they not support encryption by default, you cannot choose to use encryption when browsing through books. This is something that we need to change, not just for Amazon. I don't mean to single them out, but they're a great example. all companies need to use an encrypted browsing habit by default for all users who haven't taken any action or picked any special methods on their own. That will increase the privacy and the rights that people enjoy worldwide.
And come with me to this part of the stage. I want to show you the next slide here. This is a program called Boundless Informant. What is that?
So I've got to give credit to the NSA for using appropriate names on this. This is one of my favorite NSA cryptonyms. Boundless Informant is a program that the NSA hid from Congress. The NSA was previously asked by Congress, was there any ability that they had to even give a rough ballpark estimate of the amount of American communications that were being intercepted? They said no. They said, we don't track those stats, and we can't track those stats. We can't tell you how many communications we're intercepting around the world, because to tell you that would be to invade your privacy. Now, I really appreciate that sentiment from them, but the reality when you look at this slide is not only do they have the capability already exists. It's already in place. The NSA has its own internal data format that tracks the both ends of a communication. And if it says this communication came from America, they can tell Congress how many of those communications they have today, right now. And what Boundless Informant tells us is more communications are being intercepted in America about Americans than there are in Russia about Russia. I'm not sure that's what an intelligence agency should be aiming for.
As there was a story broken in the Washington Post, again, from your data, the headline says NSA broke privacy rules thousands of times per year. Tell us about that.
We also heard in congressional testimony last year, it was an amazing thing for someone like me who came from the NSA, who's seen the actual internal documents, those within them, to see officials testifying under oath that there had been no abuses, that there had been no violations of the NSA's rules. When we knew this story was coming. But what's especially interesting about this, about the fact that the NSA has violated their own rules, their own laws, thousands of times in a single year, including one event by itself, one event out of those 2,776, that affected more than 3,000 people. In another event, they intercepted all the calls in Washington, D.C. by accident. What's amazing about this report, that didn't get that much attention, is the fact that not only were there 2,776 abuses, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein, had not seen this report until the Washington Post contacted her asking for comment on the report. And she then requested a copy from the NSA and received it, but had never seen this before that. What does that say about the state of oversight in American intelligence when the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee has no idea that the rules are being broken thousands of times every year?
And one response to this whole debate is this. Why should we care about all this surveillance, honestly? I mean, look, if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about. What's wrong with that point of view?
Well, so the first thing is you're giving up your rights. You're saying, hey, you know, I don't think I'm going to need them. So I'm just going to trust that, you know, let's get rid of them. It doesn't really matter. You know, these guys are going to do the right thing. Your rights matter because you never know when you're going to need them. Beyond that, it's a part of our cultural identity, not just in America, but in Western societies and in democratic societies around the world. People should be able to pick up the phone and to call their family. People should be able to send a text message to their loved ones. People should be able to buy a book online. They should be able to travel by train. They should be able to buy an airline ticket without wondering about how these events are going to look to an agent of the government, possibly not even your government, years in the future, how they're going to be misinterpreted and what they're going to think their intention is. We have a right to privacy. We require warrants to be based on probable cause or some kind of individualized suspicion because we recognize that trusting anybody, any government authority with the entirety of human communication in secret without oversight is simply too great a temptation to be ignored.
some people are furious at what you've done. I had a quote recently from Dick Cheney, who said that Julian Assange was a flea bite. Edward Snowden is the lion that bit the head off the dog. Do you think you committed one of the worst acts of betrayal in American history? What would you say to people who think that?
Dick Cheney is really something else. Thank you. I think it's amazing because at the time, Julian Assange was doing some of his greatest work. Dick Cheney was saying he was going to end governments worldwide, the skies were going to ignite and the seas were going to boil off. And now he's saying it's a flea bite. So we should be suspicious about the same sort of overblown claims of damage to national security from these kind of officials. But let's assume that these people really believe. I would argue that they have kind of a narrow conception of national security. The prerogatives of people like Dick Cheney do not keep the nation safe. The public interest is not always the same as the national. Going to war with people who are not our enemies, in places that are not a threat, doesn't make us safe. And that applies whether it's in Iraq or on the internet. The internet is not the enemy. Our economy is not the enemy. American businesses, Chinese businesses, and any other company out there is a part of our society. It's a part of our interconnected world. There are ties of fraternity that bond us together. And if we destroy these bonds by compromising the standards, the security, the manner of behavior that nations and citizens all around the world expect us to abide by.
But, it's alleged that you've stolen 1.7 million documents. Only a few hundred of them have been shared with journalists so far. Are there more revelations to come?
There are absolutely more revelations to come. I don't think there's any question that some of the most important reporting to be done is yet to come.
Well, let me come to Maria, because I want to ask you about this particular revelation. Come and take a look at this. I mean, this is a story which I think for a lot of the techies in this room is the single most shocking thing that they have heard in the last few months. It's about a program called Bull Run. Could you explain what that is?
So Bull Run, and this is again where we've got to thank the NSA for their candor. This is a program named after a Civil War veteran. The British counterpart is called Edgehill, which is the UK Civil War battle. And the reason that I believe they're named this way is because they target our own infrastructure. They're programs through which the NSA intentionally misleads corporate partners. They tell corporate partners that these are state standards. They say, hey, we need to work with you to secure your system. But in reality, they're giving bad advice to these companies. Makes them degrade the security of their services. They're building in back doors that not only the NSA can exploit, but anyone else who has time and money to research and find it can then use to let themselves into the world of communication. And this is really dangerous because if we lose a single standard, if we lose the trust of something like SSL, which was specifically targeted by the Bull Run program, we will live in a less safe world overall. We won't be able to access our banks, and we won't be able to access commerce without worrying about people monitoring those communications or subverting them for their own.
And do those same decisions also potentially open America up to cyber attack from other sources?
Absolutely. One of the problems, one of sort of the dangerous legacies that we've seen in the post-9/11 era is that the NSA has traditionally worn two hats. They've been in charge of offensive operations and attacking, but they've also been in charge of defensive operations. And traditionally, they've always prioritized defense over offense based on the principle that American secrets are simply worth more. If we hack a Chinese business and steal their secrets, if we hack a government office in Berlin and steal their secrets, that has less value to the American people than making sure that the Chinese can't get access to our secrets. So by reducing the security of our communication, they're not only putting the world at risk, they're putting America at risk in a fundamental way, because intellectual property is the basis, the foundation of our economy. And if we put that at risk through weak security, we're going to be paying for it with you.
So they made a calculation that it was worth doing this as part of America's defense against terrorism. Surely that makes it a price worth paying.
Well, when you look at the results of these programs stopping terrorism, you'll see that that's unfounded. And you don't have to take my word for it, because we've had the first open court, the first federal court that's reviewed this outside of sort of the secrecy arrangement, called these programs Orwellian and likely unconstitutional. The Congress, who has access to be briefed on these things and now has the desire to be, has produced bills to reform it, and two independent White House panels who reviewed all of the classified evidence said these programs have never stopped a single terrorist attack that was imminent in the United States. So is it really terrorism that we're stopping? Do these programs have any value at all? I say no, and all three branches of the American government say no as well.
I mean, do you think there's a deeper motivation for them than the war against terrorism?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you say again.
Sorry, do you think there's a deeper motivation for them other than the war against terrorism?
Yeah, the bottom line is that terrorism has always been what we in the intelligence world would call a cover for action. Terrorism is something that provokes an emotional response that allows people to rationalize authorizing powers and programs that they wouldn't give otherwise. The Bull Run and Edge Hill type programs, the NSA asked these authorities back in the 1990s. They asked the FBI to go to Congress and make the case. The FBI went to Congress and didn't make the case. But Congress and the American people said no. They said it's not worth the risk to our economy. They said it's worth too much damage to our society to justify the game. But what we saw is in the post-9/11 era, they used secrecy and they used the justification of terrorism to start these programs in secret without asking Congress, without asking the American people. And it's that kind of government behind closed doors that we need to guard ourselves against, because it makes us less safe and it offers more value.
Okay, come with me here for a sec, because I've got a more personal question for you. Speaking of terror, most people would find the situation you're in right now in Russia pretty terrifying. You obviously, you know, you heard what happened, what the treatment that Bradley Manning got, Chelsea Manning is now, is. And there was a story in BuzzFeed saying that there are people in the intelligence community who want you dead. How are you coping with it? How are you coping with the fear?
You know, it's no mystery that there are governments out there that want to be. I've made clear again and again and again that I go to sleep every morning thinking about what I can do for the American people. I don't want to harm my government. I want to help them. Well, the fact that they are willing to completely ignore due process, they're willing to declare guilt without ever seeing a trial, these are things that we need to work against as a society and say, hey, this is not appropriate. We shouldn't be threatening people. We shouldn't be criminalizing journalists. And whatever part I can do to see that end, I'm happy to do despite them.
So I'd actually like to get some feedback from the audience here, because I know there's widely differing reactions to Edison. Suppose you had the following two choices, right? You could view what he did as fundamentally a reckless act that has endangered America, or you viewed it as fundamentally a heroic act that will work towards America and the world's long-term good. Those are the choices I'll give you. I'm curious to see who's willing to vote with the first of those. This is a reckless act. There's some hands going up. Hands going up. It's hard to put your hand up when the man is standing right here, but I see them.
I can see you.
Who goes with the second choice, the fundamentally heroic act? And I think it's true to say that there are a lot of people who didn't show a hand, and I'm still thinking this through. Because it seems to me that the debate around you doesn't split along traditional political lines. It's not left or right. It's not really about pro-government, libertarian, or not just that. Part of it is almost a generational issue. You're part of a generation that grew up with the internet, and it seems as if you become offended at almost a visceral level when you see something done that you think will harm the internet. Is that some truth to that?
It is. You know, I think it's very true. This is not a left or right issue. You know, our basic freedom, and when I say our, I don't just mean Americans. I mean people around the world. It's not a partisan issue. These are things that all people believe. And it's not for all of us to accept them. And to people who have seen and enjoyed a free and open internet, it's up to us to preserve that liberty for the next generation to enjoy. And if we don't change this, if we don't stand up to make the changes we need to do to keep the internet safe, not just for us, but for everyone, we're going to lose that. And that would be a tremendous loss, not just for us, but for the world.
Well, I have heard similar language recently from the founder of the World Wide Web, who I actually think is with us, Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Tim, would you like to come up and say, do you have a microphone for Tim? Good to see you. Yeah. Which camp are you in, by the way? Greater Hero. I have a theory on this.
I've given much longer explanation to that question, but here
Ed, you've read the proposal that Tim talks about a new Magna Carta to take back the internet. Is that something that makes sense?
Absolutely. I mean, my generation, I grew up not just thinking about the internet, but I grew up in the internet. And although I never expected to have the chance to defend it in such a direct and practical manner, and to sort of embody it in this unusual, almost avatar manner, I think there's something poetic about the fact that one of the sons of the internet has actually become close to the internet as a result of their political expression. And I believe that a Magna Carta for the internet is exactly what we need. We need to encode our values, not just in writing, but in the structure of the internet. And it's something that I hope, I invite everyone in the audience, not just here in Vancouver, but around the world, to join and participate in.
Do you have a question? Two questions, a general question. Ed, can you still hear us?
Yes, I can hear
you. Yeah, okay.
Oh, he's back. The wiretap on your ankle a little bit. So from the 25 years of sort of stepping back and thinking, what would you think would be the best that we could achieve from all the discussions that we had about the web we want?
You know, when we think about in terms of how far we can go, I think that's a question that's really only limited by what we're willing to put in. I think the internet that we've enjoyed in the past has been exactly what we as a not just a nation, but as a people around the world need. And by cooperating, by engaging not just the technical parts of society, but as you said, the users, the people around the world who contribute through the internet, through social media, who just check the weather, who rely on it every day as a part of their life, to champion that, we will get not just the internet we've had, but a better internet, a better now, something that we can use to build a future that will be better not just than what we hoped for, but anything that we could have imagined.
It's 30 years ago that TED was founded, 1984. A lot of the conversation since then has been along the lines that actually George Orwell got it wrong. It's not Big Brother watching us. We, through the power of the web and transparency, are now watching Big Brother. Your revelation kind of drove a stake through the heart of that rather optimistic view. But you still believe there's a way of doing something about that. And you do too.
Right, so there is an argument to be made that the powers of Big Brother have increased enormously. There was a recent legal article at Yale that established something called the Bankman-Soltani principle, which is that our expectation of privacy is violated when the capabilities of government surveillance have become cheaper by an order of magnitude. And each time that occurs, we need to revisit and rebalance our privacy problem. Now, that hasn't happened since the government surveillance powers have increased by several magnitudes. And that's why we're in the problem that we're in today. But there is still hope, because the power of individuals has also been increased by technology. I am living proof that an individual can go head-to-head against the most powerful adversaries and the most powerful intelligence agencies around the world and win. And I think that's something that we need to take hope from and we need to build on and make it accessible not just to technical experts but to ordinary citizens around the world. Journalism is not a crime. Communication is not a crime. And we should not be monitored in our everyday activities.
I'm not quite sure how you shake the hand of a bot, but I imagine it's... This is the hand right here.
Nice to meet you, and I hope my team, my view of you guys. So.
Thank you. Right. Thank you, Tim. I mean, the New York Times recently called for an amnesty for you. Would you welcome the chance to come back to America?
Absolutely. I mean, there's really no question. So the principle that has been the foundation of this project has been the public interest. And the principles that underlie the journalistic establishment in the United States and around it. And I think if the press is now saying, we support this is something that needs to happen, that's a powerful argument, but it's not the final one. And I think that's something that the public. But at the same time, the government has hinted that they want some kind of deal, that they want me to sort of compromise the journalists with which I've been working to come back. And I want to make it very clear that I did not do this to be safe. I did this to do what was right. And I'm not going to stop my work in the public interest just to benefit myself.
In the meantime, courtesy of the internet and this technology, you're here back in North America, not quite the US, Canada, in this form. How does that feel?
Canada is different than what I expected. It's a lot warmer.
And the mission is ideas worth spreading. If you could encapsulate it in a single idea, what is your idea worth spreading right now at this moment?
I would say the last year has been a reminder that democracy may die behind closed doors, but we as individuals are born behind those same closed doors. And we don't have to give up our privacy to have good government. We don't have to give up our liberty to have to do. And I think by working together, we can have both open government and private lives. And I look forward to working with everyone around the world between that. Thank you very much.
Ed, thank you.
think people are behind the idea of open government, private lives. And I think what he is saying here is he's doing this for the public interest. His vocal print shows that to be true, both emotionally and spiritually. I'm going to go ahead and evaluate his speech right around 24-5 that he's happy with what he's done despite the risks. I didn't do it because I felt like it was getting in the way and we were running out of time. We have run out of time, but I would like to play you a piece. It's a 15-minute piece from Brussels, another TED event that shows how the events that Edward Snowden is talking about, how it has changed the world's view of the people and the government of the United States. Do you have any comment before I do this, Richard?
No, please go.
Edward Snowden's had over 2 million
problems with the U.S. cloud industry and software companies with these revelations. Blaming Snowden for causing problems to the U.S.
Look,
cloud industry.
Look, it is way at the end. I have to pull this back.
Al Gore for causing
he said, like, at the end of this, he says it's like blaming Snowden for the problems of the United States security is like blaming Al Gore for the problems with global warming.
And they have leave. And they have
I'm trying to take this back to the beginning here because I was looking at certain pieces. Okay. Maybe it'll go now. It'll catch up with itself in a few minutes. This one's had about 1 million hits.
Most likely the two most likely largest inventions of our generation are the internet and the mobile phone. They've changed the world. However, largely to our surprise, they also turned out to be the perfect tools for the surveillance state. Turned out that the capability to collect data, information, and connections about basically any of us and all of us, exactly what we've been hearing throughout the summer through revelations and leaks about Western intelligence agencies, mostly U.S. intelligence agencies, watching over the rest of the world. We heard about these starting the revelations from June 6th. Edward Snowden started leaking information, some secret classified information, from the U.S. intelligence agencies. And we started learning about things like PRISM and X-Keyscore and others. And these are examples of the kinds of programs U.S. intelligence agencies are running right now against the whole rest of the world. And if you look back about the forecasts and on surveillance by George Orwell, well, it turns out that George Orwell was an optimist. We are right now seeing much larger scale of tracking of individual citizens than he could have ever imagined. And this here is the infamous NSA data center in Utah. Due to be opened very soon, it will be both a supercomputing center and a data storage center. You basically imagine it as a large hall filled with hard drives storing data they are collecting. And it's a pretty big building. How big? Well, I can give you the numbers. 140,000 square meters, but that doesn't really tell you very much. Maybe it's better to imagine it as a comparison. You think about the largest IKEA store you've ever been. This, 5 times larger. How many hard drives can you fit in an IKEA store, right? Pretty big. We estimate that just the electricity bill for running this data center is going to be in the tens of millions of dollars a year.
And this kind of wholesale surveillance means that they can collect our data and keep it basically forever, keep it for extended periods of time, keep it for years, keep it for decades. And this opens up completely new kinds of risks to us all. And what it is that it is wholesale blanket surveillance for everyone. Well, it's not exactly everyone. The U.S. intelligence only has a legal right to monitor foreigners. They can monitor foreigners when foreigners' data connections end up in the United States or pass through the United States. And monitoring foreigners doesn't sound too bad until you realize that I'm a foreigner and you're a foreigner. In fact, 96% of the planet are foreigners. Right? So it is wholesale blanket surveillance of all of us who use telecommunications and the internet. But don't get me wrong, there are actually types of surveillance that are okay. I love freedom, but even I agree that some surveillance is fine. If the law enforcement is trying to find a murderer, or they're trying to catch the drug lord, or trying to prevent a school shooting, and they have leads, and they have suspects, then it's perfectly fine for them to tap the suspect's phone and to intercept his internet communications. I'm not arguing that at all. But that's not what programs like PRISM are about. They are not about doing surveillance on people that they have reason to suspect of some wrongdoing. They're about doing surveillance on people they know are innocent. So the four main arguments supporting surveillance like this. Well, the first of all is that when...
Well, I don't know why it just stopped. It's neither on pause or anything else. See if I can give it more room here so maybe it can go on. It just absolutely froze. Maybe this was because we were only scheduled for an hour. The buffer quit pulling in data. How could I get around that, Steve? Refreshed it once. Let's see what happens.
You start discussing about these revelations.
We were at 4:55.
There will be naysayers trying to minimize the importance of these revelations, saying that, you know, we knew all this already. We knew it was happening. There's nothing new here. And that's not true. Don't let anybody tell you that we knew this already, because we did not know this already. Our worst fears might have been something like this, but we didn't know it was happening. Now we know for a fact it's happening. We didn't know about it. We didn't know about PRISM, we didn't know about X-Key score, we didn't know about CyberTrans, we didn't know about Double Arrow, we did not know about SkyWriter. All these different programs run by U.S. intelligence agencies. And now we do. And we did not know that U.S. intelligence agencies go to extremes, such as infiltrating standardization bodies to sabotage encryption algorithms on purpose. And what that means is that you take something which is secure, an encryption algorithm which is so secure that if you use that algorithm to encrypt one file, Nobody can decrypt that file. Even if they take every single computer on the planet just to decrypt that one file, it's going to take millions of years. So that's basically perfectly safe, uncrackable. You take something which is that good, and then you weaken it on purpose, making all of us less secure as an end result. The real-world equivalent would be that intelligence agencies would force some secret PIN code into every single house alarm so they could get into every single house because, you know, bad people might have house alarms. But it will also make all of us less secure as an end result. Backdooring encryption algorithms that boggles the mind. But of course, these intelligence agencies are doing their job. This is what they have been told to do. Do signals intelligence. Monitor telecommunications. Monitor internet traffic. That's what they're trying to do. And since most, a very big part of the internet traffic today is encrypted, they're trying to find ways around the encryption. One way is to sabotage encryption algorithms, which is a great example about how U.S. intelligence agencies are running loose. They're completely out of control, and they should be brought back under control. So what do we actually know about the leak? Everything is based on the files leaked by Mr. Snowden. The very first Christmas slide from the beginning of June detail a collection program where the data is collected from service providers, and they actually go and name the service providers they have access to. They even have a specific date on when the collection of data began for each of the service providers. So for example, they name the collection from Microsoft started on the 11th of September 2007, for Yahoo on the 12th of March 2008, and then others, Google, Facebook, Skype, Apple, and so on. And every single one of these companies denies. They all say that this simply isn't true, that they are not giving backdoor access to their data. Yet, we have these files. So is one of the parties lying, or is there some other alternative explanation? And one explanation would be that these parties, these service providers, are not cooperating. Instead, they've been hacked. That would explain it. They aren't cooperating. They've been hacked. In this case, they've been hacked by their own government. That might sound outlandish, but we already have cases where this has happened. For example, the case of the Plain malware, which we strongly believe was authored by the U.S. government, and which to spread subverted the security of the Windows update network, meaning here the company was hacked by their own government. But there's more evidence supporting this theory as well. Der Spiegel from Germany leaked more information about the operations run by the elite hacker units operating inside these intelligence agencies. Inside NSA, the unit is called TAO, Tailored Access Operations, and inside GCHQ, which is the UK equivalent, it's called NAC, Network Analysis Center. And these recent leaks of these three slides detail an operation run by this GCHQ intelligence agency from United Kingdom targeting a telco here in Belgium. And what this really means is that an EU country's intelligence agency is breaching the security of a telco of a fellow EU country on purpose. And they discussed it in their slides completely casually. Business as usual. Here's the primary target. Here's the secondary target. Here's the teaming. They probably had a team building on Thursday evening in the pub. They even use cheesy PowerPoint clip art like, you know, success when they gain access to services like this. What the hell? And then there's the argument that, okay, yes, this might be going on, but then again, other countries are doing it as well. All countries fight. And maybe that's true. Many countries fight, not all of them. But let's take an example. Let's take, for example, Sweden. I'm speaking Sweden because Sweden has a little bit similar law to the United States. When your data traffic goes through Sweden, their intelligence agency has a legal right by the law to intercept that traffic. All right. How many Swedish decision makers and politicians
and business leaders use every day US-based services like, you know, run Windows or OS X, or use Facebook or LinkedIn, or store their data in clouds like iCloud or SkyDrive or Dropbox, or maybe use online services like...
We may get knocked off at any minute. We've put the link to this in both chats so that you can go listen to the rest. We'll stay as long as we can and discuss this next time.
Amazon Web Services or Salesforce. And the answer is every single Swedish business leader does that every single day. Then we turn it around. How many American leaders use Swedish web mail and cloud services? And the answer is zero. So this is not balanced. It's not balanced by any means, not even close. And when we do have the occasional European success story, even those then typically end up being sold to the United States. Like Skype used to be secure. It used to be end-to-end encrypted. Then it was sold to the United States. Today it no longer is secure. So once again, we take something which is secure and then we make it less secure on purpose, making all of us less secure as an outcome. And then the argument that the United States is only fighting terrorism. It's the war on terror. You shouldn't worry about it. Well, it's not the war on terror. Yes, but part of it is war on terror. And yes, there are terrorists, and they do kill and maim, and we should fight them. But we know through these leaks that they've used the same techniques to listen to phone calls of European leaders, to tap the email of presidents of Mexico and Brazil, to read email traffic inside United Nations headquarters and EU Parliament. And I don't think they're trying to find terrorists from inside EU Parliament. Right? So it's not the war on terror. Part of it might be. And there are terrorists. But are we really thinking about terrorists as such an existential threat that we're willing to do anything at all to fight them? Are the Americans ready to throw away the Constitution and throw it into trash just because there are terrorists? And the same thing with the Bill of Rights and all the amendments and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the EU conventions on human rights and fundamental freedoms, and the press freedom. Do we really think terrorism is such an existential threat? We're ready to do anything about it. But people are cared about terrorism. And then they think that maybe that surveillance is okay because, you know, they have nothing to hide. Feel free to survey me if that helps. And whoever tells you that they have nothing to hide simply haven't thought about it long enough. We have this thing called privacy. And if you really think that you have nothing to hide, please make sure that's the first thing you tell me, because then I know that I shouldn't trust you with any secrets, because obviously you can't keep a secret. But people are brutally honest with the internet. And when these leaks started, many people were asking me about this. And I have nothing to hide. I'm not doing anything bad or anything illegal. Yet, I have nothing that I would in particular like to share with an intelligence agency, especially a foreign intelligence agency. And if we indeed need a big brother, I would much rather have a domestic big brother than a foreign big brother. And when the leaks started, the very first thing I tweeted about this was a comment about how, you know, when you've been using search engines, you've been potentially leaking all that to U.S. intelligence. And 2 minutes later, I got a reply by somebody called Kimberly from the United States challenging me. Like, why am I worried about this? Like, what am I sending to worry about? Am I sending naked pictures or something? And my answer to Kimberly was that what I'm sending is none of your business. And it should be none of your government's business. That's what it's about. It's about privacy. Privacy is non-negotiable. It should be built in to all the systems we use. one thing we should all understand is that we are brutally honest with search engines. You show me your search history, and I'll find something incriminating or something embarrassing there from in 5 minutes. We are more honest with search engines than we are with our family. Search engines know more about you than your family members know about you. And this is all the kind of information we're giving away. We're giving away the United States. And surveillance changes history. We know this through examples of corrupt presidents like Nixon. Imagine if he would have had the kind of surveillance tools that are available today. And let me actually quote the president of Brazil, Ms. Dilma Rousseff. She was one of the targets of NSA surveillance. Her email was read, and she spoke at United Nations headquarters, and she said, if there's no right to privacy, there can be no true freedom of expression and opinion, and therefore there can be no effective democracy. That's what it's about. Privacy is the building block of our democracy. And to quote a fellow security researcher, Marcos Rano, he said that the United States is right now treating the internet as it would be treating one of its colonies. So we're back to the age of colonization. And we, the foreign users of the internet, we should think about Americans as our masters. So Mr. Snowden, he's been blamed for many things. Some are blaming him for causing problems to the U.S. cloud industry and software companies with these revelations. And blaming Snowden for causing problems to the U.S. cloud industry would be the equivalent of blaming Al Gore for causing global war. So, what is there to be done? Should we worry? No, we shouldn't worry. We should be angry. This is wrong, and it's rude, and it should not be done. But that's not going to really change the situation. What's going to change the situation for the rest of the world is to try to steer away from systems built in the United States. And that's much easier said than done. How do you do that? Any single country in Europe cannot replace a built replacement for the U.S.-made operating systems and cloud systems. But maybe you don't have to do it alone. Maybe you can do it together with other countries. The solution is open source. By building together open, free, secure systems, you can go around such surveillance. And then one country doesn't have to solve the problem by itself. It only has to solve one little problem. And to quote a fellow security researcher, Harold Mayer, one country only has to make a small wave. Those small waves together become a tide. And the tide will lift all the boats up at the same time. At the time we will build with secure, free, open source systems will become the time that will lift all of us up and above the surveillance state. Thank you very much.
I think these two things together are incredible. Edward Snowden tells us what's really going on. And I don't remember how to pronounce. Hyponen is telling us how America is now being looked at, not trusted. America is rude. He said it at the end. So I think bringing information like this to the forefront, to the people, is a really important cause. And that's why we want to start this column. I love these names, Truth Sleuth, Sincere Deception, Pinocchio Portal.
I like that one.
Pinocchio Portal? We could give out
Pinocchio. I think it's good. Oh, I don't know if you can use Pinocchio. It might be trademarked.
Yeah, that's true, from some newspaper or even Walt Disney.
Disney.
But we've got a couple people who want to volunteer to be reporters and bring in information, and I will see what we can get done to bring the truth to the nation, to the world.
I'll say goodbye to everybody over at Blog Talk Radio because I think we're going to be cut off in about 5 seconds. But I'll jump over onto WebEx chat separately.
you know, George says, we have always been rude. That's why we were called the ugly Americans.